You're listening to 3RingRadio.com. This is part two of a three-part, very special broadcast. This is the audio version of the Trenchcoat Diaries, an audio memorial to Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris. Listen, for the next hour as you'll hear interviews, explosions, and commentary from folks I don't know if you'd necessarily hear in the major media. Remember, everything you're about to hear is real. So stay tuned and keep in touch through 3RingRadio.com.
Hi, this is Ben of Penn & Teller. You're listening to 3RingRadio, but I've been known to lie.
He was having problems with his home life.
Harris's friends say they saw pressure building in him both at home and at school, where they say he was teased and tormented as an outcast.
But I think he was pushed over the edge to the point where he developed this mind frame of where there was no way out.
Dylan, when we were talking one time, he just said how he hated like all the jocks, athletes, just because they could walk all over people and not have to worry about anything in life.
The sheriff in the Denver suburb compares the search to walking through a minefield.
They came over by us, they were throwing pipe bombs.
Eric Harris boasted that pipe bombs are the easiest and deadliest way to kill a group of people, and explains his use of shrapnel to multiply the deaths. You can use screws, BBs, nails of all kinds, buckshot, hell, staples would even be useful, he wrote.
They were laughing about killing people, and it was like they having the time of their life, and just hooping and hollering until they shot somebody.
All in the library, and we started hearing shots in the hall, and then they came in and they all told us to get under the desk, and we all got under the desk, and then they just started coming in the library and opening fire and shooting off bombs.
The commons is right below, and you just feel it shake, and the plaster would fall and the books would fall, and they came in here and they shot some, and then they went back out, and
people were getting shot all around me.
There was one boy at a table right next to us.
What's
and
that?
There was a guy at a table right next to us, next to me and her, and they just shot him and then walked away, and then he was just sitting there in a pool of blood.
Students say the two suspects were dressed in black trench coats and laughed as they sprayed bullets. Some witnesses say the suspects seemed to be singling out athletes and minorities.
Hey, everybody. 3Ring Radio. 3RingRadio.com. Keep in touch. Email me and tell you how you're enjoying the show. Next, I'm going to play a song from you. You got to wonder if this kind of mentality didn't drive these kids to start shooting people. I mean, when you hear this queer bait song that I'm about to play, well, I'm only going to play like a couple seconds of it, so don't tune out because it's really irritating. But this song was produced and recorded right after the event, the Columbine killings. And these kids sold it and they for profit. And they try to defend themselves here in a speech saying, oh, it was just for God or whatever. But trust me, they made a lot of money off it. Take a listen. I'm going to play very little of it, so don't tune out. And you're going to be surprised at what I play at the end. And coming up, there's a couple. I have two interviews. One with the victim's mother. She's the only one I trust. I don't even trust her son. I think her son was an accomplice, Brooks Brown. But that's just my opinion. Take a listen for yourself. There's two interviews coming up, and enjoy. 3Ring Radio, 3RingRadio.com, and my name is Shane.
I'd like to introduce to you, from the class of 99, Steve Cohen, and from the class of 2000, Jonathan Cohen, as they sing Friend of Mine.
We'd like to let you guys know that this is the final time we'll be performing the song. And from the beginning, the purpose of the song was just to glorify God and to serve you guys, and we hope that it's done that. So.
columbine, flower blue, tenderly I sing to you. Columbine, rose blood red, heartbreak overflows my heart.
You know, your website, it's simply entitled 42099, a Columbine site.
Uh-huh.
Okay. How did you get involved, and why are you doing this?
Oh, wow. That story actually goes back quite a bit. In fact, the website itself was made the day after Columbine had the attack. And
how old are you?
I'm 30.
Right on.
Last year.
And I'm 35.
Okay. It's nice to meet somebody my own age.
Yeah, right.
I get a lot of people who are students writing, which is why I say that. So.
Yeah, that's why I was interested in your age. Me too. I did a little zine about the whole thing after the thing, and that's why I was interested. You sounded a little older.
Right. Yeah.
But go ahead. Tell me about the history of your website. How did it start?
Okay, well, it got started basically, it goes back to the day of. I saw what happened on the news and was just so upset, like many people that day, that I went and I'm a web developer, so one of the first things that I thought to do is I'll just put a web page up there, typical little memorial for what, you know, I knew had gone on, and thought, well, maybe that'll make me feel a little better. And then I started surfing around the web, and I noticed how many rumors were just flying around and how nobody really seemed to know anything of substance, just sensationalism everywhere, both, you know, CNN, I mean, all the news websites, all the personal pages were just all either rants or memorials or just completely, you know, fiction made up on the fly by people who didn't really know what was going on. So I kind of, you know, made it my mission to bring the real truth out. I got upset about a lot of the rumors that I'd heard flying around that people were presenting as fact and thought, you know what, somebody should get out there and tell the truth the way it is. And the news people aren't going to do it because all they want to focus on is what'll get them the ratings. And,
yeah,
so you know, all the people who are putting the memorials together, they're focusing on the pain. Well, let's get something out there that focuses on what happened. So you
have no personal involvement?
You know, when I started it, no, I didn't. I just had a real deep sympathy and understanding for what had happened. I'd been, when I was growing up, I was in a small town, and I went to a high school that was very much like Columbine, and there was a lot of the same things that, there was a lot of the same things going on in my school that went on at Columbine, and as such, I really did relate to a lot of the people who were involved, both, you know, the survivors of it and the shooters themselves, that, you know, I'm a woman, of course, so I can't really, you know, relate to what was going on in a male's head, but I understand what they felt and...
The pain, yeah.
Yeah, how they felt, you know, just at their wits' end to do, you know, anything about it and just, you know, wanting to break out of that cycle. So
it's funny, there's a definitive line in the sand with this thing where there's a group of people that are sympathetic to Eric and Dylan, and there's a group of people who just don't understand why that would be.
Yeah, I get that a lot on my guests.
It's almost like the same line in the sand that goes on in high school.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly the same thing. That, you know, and it's the same attitude, too, that the people who understand, you know, the mentality behind what Eric and Dylan did and not necessarily condone it, but understand where they were at, are the same people who are getting blasted by people who don't understand, you know, by saying, well, if you understand them and you say you do, well, then you obviously support the, you know, what they did. And it's that exact same... Well, if I don't understand it, I'm condemning it.
Yeah, they're very close-minded. They don't understand it. You had to be greatly pained to do something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, really that's the focus of the whole thing. I mean, both the what happened there that day and my own involvement in it now. That I felt a lot of pain coming off of, you know, just seeing the pain the people who were involved in it went through, seeing what, you know, the history behind the crime itself, seeing the individuals involved in that history and their own struggles, and then, you know, just the impact that it had on everybody around the world, that, you know, it's just, it's really a shame that, that there can't be a better middle ground that could be found out there even 5 years later, you know.
I think that'll bubble up eventually once people start studying it more. For going back to what you said originally about the media,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I've been going through 5 years of videos collected from all of the media shows. I've got little sound bites of people talking about how they swear they saw them drinking blood as they did this.
Oh yeah, I remember that rumor. Oh, that's one of the ones that really upset me.
So I want to ask you about the real, but there's some real conspiracy theories going on out there, and I am really trying to read into some of those, and I wonder, how do you feel about this? Some of the conspiracy theories, like there's more than two people that were involved.
Well, that's one of the most famous conspiracy theories out there right now, is the third gunman. You know, I've really tried personally to avoid getting into debates with people about the conspiracy theories and all of the hot buzz topics that people argue about the most on the forums, just because of how extreme people get over these things. Like the third gunman, you know, people are willing to just go to the bat with this theory and defend it to the death. And, you know, personally, I've got my own take on every theory that's come up.
I'd like to hear, what are your theories, though, on that? I mean, because that's something that seriously is questioned. The third gunman, and I read just recently, two of the lead police officers are now working in Washington, D.C. at some sort of mysterious consulting firm.
Uh-huh.
That then they're working together, and it seems, you know, There's a lot of very strange things going on around this.
Yeah, it does seem like there has been a number of situations where there were cover-ups, which is, honestly, I don't personally think there was a third gunman per se, but I do believe that they did have help getting set up and, you know, that there was probably at least one other person involved that helped them get to the bombs inside, helped them distract people so that they could get their stuff set up, that, you know...
Right. The logic, when you apply logic to the conspiracies... Mm-hmm. Some of that stuff's logical. So what else do you think about the conspiracies? Are they just a bunch of phooey, or?
You know, it's really hard to say. Like, another real popular one right now that people are bashing back and forth about is whether Dylan killed himself or not.
Right.
You know, and there's a good chance that, you know, he didn't shoot himself. I personally feel that probably is more likely the case than not, just because of the circumstances.
So you feel he did not kill himself?
No, I feel he did,
okay.
Honestly.
Okay.
Just from what I've read, from what his parents have said, and from what, you know, reading the coroner's report.
What have they ever said?
Well, they just mentioned when this whole situation came up, and the Dylan's autopsy had not been released yet, and they were still sitting on it and refusing to let it be released, and people were asking, well, you know, what is this? People are saying that, you know, Dylan didn't shoot himself, and the reason that came up was because he was shot on the left side of his temple, or in his left temple. And his parents explained that to the news media after a while of people going back and forth, and they said, well, our son was left-handed. And so that cleared up that whole thing, but that's really where that rumor got started that he didn't kill himself, was with the whole, well, he got shot in the left side, and how could he have shot himself in the left side of the head?
Right.
Well, he's left-handed, so, you know, and that and the coroner's report backing the parents' statement, just, they'd know better than me, you know, sitting in front of my computer, whether or not their son was likely to kill himself. His writings were all very suicidal. You know, I don't see why there would be any reason for him to suddenly, you know, decide, oh, I'm not going to go to the last step of the base with Eric, you know.
Yeah, sure. How do you feel about the Otter, almost X-File type conspiracies then? Because that's logical, what you just said. It was very simple. He's left-handed.
Right. Well, you know, honestly, I'm an X-Files fan myself, so it's funny you should say that, but... You know, I do think that there was some maybe even necessary covering up done on the part of the officials that, you know, like an example with Danny's body, Danny Rohrbaugh's body, how they went back and forth and even lawsuit over whether or not the officials actually shot and killed Danny.
Which seemed to be logical.
Right, and since nobody was really speaking up and they didn't want to bring out the ballistics reports and stuff, it got fishier and fishier. Well, they still haven't said whether or not an official shot Danny. They just said that he didn't kill him. So the bullet that killed Danny was indeed from Eric's gun, but they didn't ever say where the third bullet came from, whether it was, you know, law officials. So I think that there has been maybe some covering up to keep even more crap from hitting the fan, so to speak.
Now, am I wrong? When this first happened, I swear I heard a theory that either Eric or Dylan's dad was somehow involved with government, some like crazy X-File stuff. And I'm an X-Files fan, so... As well.
No, I don't really remember anything like that. I know that Eric's father was originally with the Marines, so that could have been a spinoff of that.
And what did Dylan's dad do for a living?
Sorry?
What did Dylan's father do for a living?
Dylan's father, you know, I've got that on my website. It's been a while since I've looked at it. Gosh.
Yeah, I swear one of them, yeah, see, that's the conspiracy that most intrigues me.
Right.
And then you see these other, these two lead cops that didn't have Eric Harris's garage search. Now they're working in D.C. at some weird place. So it's really, it's some strange stuff, and I would really like it to be, like, some of those questions to be answered.
You know, and a lot of us would, too. And because they haven't been real forthright with the evidence that they've delivered to the public, you know, it's just really hard to say. Like, they just recently had this evidence exhibit, and they're saying, well, that's all of it. But, you know, I instinctively say, well, yeah, right, sure it is.
And
I'm just not inclined to believe that that's all of it, that that's all they're willing to give us right now.
And you know that they still have sealed all of the teachers' comments after the shooting. Now, and a lot of those teachers said there was more than one gunman,
right,
and there was a lot more going on.
Yeah.
All of those comments have been sealed.
And I also haven't seen the basement tapes come up either. that, you know, they said that they released all the evidence, but I didn't hear anything about, you know, the basement tapes being released at all.
Now, you have on your website that they were released through Time Magazine.
They were originally, yes. Time Magazine put out 5 tapes and didn't stop to ask anybody because they knew, I think, that they were going to get blasted for it. But, yeah, as soon as
how did they put them out?
You know, I'm not really sure how that went. I know that I caught an excerpt from one of the videos on television. I didn't have a chance to actually videotape it, but I did see it on TV myself. And about, I'd say, a little less than a week later is when I saw a news report saying that those tapes had been sealed and that Time was issuing an apology for not talking to the victim's parents first before releasing them.
Wow. I didn't know that. Now, I knew that like a lot of journalists were allowed to see those tapes.
Right. But they actually released them to the news media to play on television.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
I still have a WAVE clip on my website that was from one of the television broadcasts from those tapes.
Really?
Yeah, it's badly bleeped out, so like every fourth word is you know, a bleep, but it's still there. If you want, I can email you the direct link to that.
No, I took the audio from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to that, and I just thought it was probably something that was taped when they met with people. I didn't realize those tapes were actually released.
Yeah, that section actually came off of one of the basement tapes.
You know, it's a shame it's a shame. Those are the tapes we could probably learn the most about.
Right, and that's why I'm not sure why they haven't released those. That they released the 7, you know, videos here recently, and none of them were, you know, the content from those tapes.
Right. I have all those videos myself, and the basement ones are the only ones I want.
Right. And those are the only ones that seem to be missing at this point from, you know, the entire collection. So.
You know, I think it's probably safer to deal in conspiracies and spooky folklore than it is in the honesty of those tapes.
Exactly.
The little bit I've heard from those tapes seem to just be brutally honest when he talks about his brother and his friends beating his ass and turning him into a monster.
Well, and then they also talk about, you know, prospective victims that they want to target. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's been held down for so long, that they mention people by name that they want to, you know, find in this school. And I think that it, you know, is quite possible that they referred to more people that actually did get hurt and, you know, were killed in the incident than the law would like us to believe. Now, why they, you know, want to keep covering up all these aspects instead of just spitting it all out once and for all and saying, okay, well, you people aren't going to stop being curious until it's all said and done, so here it is, you know? But I don't know. It just does seem like they're still holding back some information, and I think that over the next 10 years we're going to see more come out.
I agree with you there. How did you feel about when they released the first video of the helicopters and the Columbine authorities were selling it for $24.95?
Oh, you know,
which is so profitable.
When that first,
I publish videos, and I was the first to bring it up to Columbine. I started selling them over the internet,
mm-hmm.
and they tried to stop me. And I said, "Well, I know it takes you a dollar to make that video, so where's the other $23 going?"
And
then they withdrew their protest of me selling them.
Yeah,
but don't you think that's odd?
Oh yeah, yeah. You know. They claim that the reason that they did that was for you know, to raise funds for, you know, the Littleton community and crap like that. But I never saw any kind of a reckoning done with the funds that they've collected off that or any of the other materials that they've sold from the website. Personally, I don't have a moral problem with it myself. You know, other people are marketing off of the tragedy. It's sad, but it's true. You know, Michael Moore is getting his pockets lined, and he didn't have anything to do with it. He wasn't there, you know, defending himself against, you know, bullet fire or anything like that. So, you know, if anybody has a right to, I suppose it's the people in Littleton. But, you know, when I first heard about it, I was a little set back that the officials would do something like that. You know, I could expect that from people who weren't actually involved with it or didn't have, you know, a duty to be involved, but not necessarily from the governmental bodies themselves. That was a little bit of a shock.
Yeah, seemed like a conflict of interest, and I say they're guilty because they didn't carry through with that pricing with the rest of their videos. You notice they've all of a sudden dropped to $6 a video.
Right, yeah, I've seen their website recently, and, you know, they also offered some weird restrictions on some of the information that they're putting out that it just, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, when they first came out with Dylan's released autopsy, they were talking about, you know, well, you can get copies of it from us, but you have to pick them up in person. You know, what's up with that? Why is his the only autopsy that they're, you know, making people come down in person to get? And they don't do that anymore, but that was what happened when they first put it out. And it just, I don't know, it's really weird to me.
Oh, yeah, for sure strange. So what are other some other things that you find strange behavior from the officials or the teachers or the community at large? And do you think anything's changed since that?
You know, really, the biggest thing that I targeted with my own feelings when I was looking at the different things that were going on was the lawsuits themselves. I thought, you know, that it was a little over the top for so many people to be suing so many people over something that, you know, was done that the people who actually did it are dead. But, you know, there were things at the time that I wondered about, but as time has gone by, I've gotten a little more insight to, like, how cagey Eric and Dylan's parents were being with, you know, talking to the media about their sons. But, you know, as time's gone by and I've gotten older and my own kids have gotten older, I realize, you know, if you just lost your son, you're not going to be wanting to, you know, go and deal with a bunch of people accusing you of being a bad parent. So, you know, I can't really blame them for sticking their heads in the sand and not wanting to deal with it sooner. But
yeah, I always get more freaked out when you see someone like a JonBenet Ramsey's parents on TV talking to the media.
Yeah.
That stuff always a little freaks me out. I'm like, man, if that happened to me, I don't think I could talk to anyone.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's kind of what made me think that Dylan and Eric's parents genuinely were as clueless as they claim to be, which is the fact that, you know, they seemed as shocked and horrified as anybody else. They weren't out there smiling and meeting with cameramen and, you know, sucking up their 10 minutes. They were hiding and still are, you know, that... but as for behaviors, really, the only thing that really bothers me throughout the whole crime itself is just the SWAT team and the officials' repeated inactivity to do, you know, they didn't do anything really that could have saved more lives at the time, and then have repeatedly dropped the ball on issues since then, whether it was dealing with the evidence or letting the evidence out or turning evidence into, you know, video to sell or, you know, saying the wrong things to the wrong people. It just seems like at every turn they've made the wrong decisions. And it just really makes me question what's going on in the government there, you know, that it just seems like there's a bunch of hands all doing different things at the same time.
Have you heard from anyone that was personally involved in the incident?
You know, I haven't actually heard it from any of the students who were victims there. I've heard from people who went to the school at the time, but, you know, while I was on lunch break and wasn't in the school, or, you know, I lived across the street and saw it from there. I've heard from a lot of people who live in Littleton and who were around at that time, but none of the actual survivors, the victims, or their families. The closest that I've come to was a fellow who claims to be the friend of Brooks Brown, who... wrote me and told me about some of Brooks's opinions on some of the independent films that have been made, but that's about as close as it comes.
And what were those opinions?
He was kind of vague on most of it, but the one that really stands out was the movie Elephant. Have you heard about that?
No.
It's an indie film that, from what I understand, is almost a complete recreation of what happened in Columbine. And there's a little information on my links page on my site about it and a link to the actual website for it. But he said that his friend did not like the way that the characters were portrayed in the movie. I have not seen it myself, so I don't really know what that means. And he was real hesitant to say anything else that... he didn't want to put, you know, words in his mouth for him, and I can't appreciate that because I wouldn't want to either.
Yeah, you know, out of all the interviews I've seen, Brooks Brown Brown's mom is the only one I think is genuine in anything I've seen so far. And I tell you, I get a weird feeling from that Brooks Brown. I don't like him too much.
You know, you're not the only one. There's a lot of people who, you know, think that maybe he knows a lot more than he's been claiming to know.
He's the guy who helped him carry in anything, if anyone did.
I've heard a lot of theories about that. In fact, somebody just wrote me not too long ago saying that they thought that that's what happened when Brooks claims that he ran into Eric in the hall and Eric told him to go away, that, you know, there's been theory that that was actually not what happened. And what happened was that they split apart at that point and Brooks decided to bug out.
Yeah, and that's the cover your ass theory. Well, the reason you saw me with him is because I was going out to have a smoke.
Right, and he just said, you know, I like you now, see you later. That's why he didn't, you know, hurt me, even though I'm on his hit list. Yeah, so.
Yeah, exactly. That's I. There's definitely, I'm skeptical of some of that stuff.
Yeah,
sure.
There's been a lot of people who've wondered about that, but, you know, he's been so very careful that, you know, it's hard to say whether or not, you know, his story about it is true. It does seem, and has seemed since day one, kind of fishy, but there was also other people that they didn't shoot, you know, that there was
sure
at least one guy in the library that they told to leave that other victims in the library have said, yeah, we heard that. So, you know, it's kind of hard to say what their mentality was when they were dealing with people one by one.
Yeah, but it's not, you're right, because we don't know them, and we didn't get to see any of those basement tapes or anything.
Exactly.
But the thing is, when I look at through 5 years of videos, and I look at Brooks Brown, and I really like his mom. Mm-hmm. So I'm really torn, but I'm just being honest on the feel I get from looking at him, watching his eyes, watching his actions. I don't believe him. And that's just, I want to believe him too.
Yeah, you know, same here. You know, that's the easy out. But, you know, and I'm definitely one for taking easy outs where things like that are concerned, because I'm definitely not wanting to poke any needles into any hornet's nests there, which is why I haven't really said anything about it on my website. I leave that kind of flaming to people who, you know, have less to lose there.
But like you put on your website, 15 deaths, 13 murders, and you just want to put out the facts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. No opinions.
Right. You know, I don't want to argue with people about it. I just want them to have a place to go to see what we do know. And if they want to make up their own theories, by all means, I'll let them entertain them on my guest book or whatever. But, you know, if they want to ask me about my personal opinion, I'm willing to give it, like I'm giving you. But, you know, that's not what my website's about, so I tend to try to stay away from inflammatory stuff like that. Plus, I want to respect people who come there, because I know that even though they don't write me, people who were there do come to my site. So, you know, I've had Tom Mauser on my site before, so, you know.
Who's Tom Mauser?
He was the father of one of the boys who was killed.
Okay.
And, you know, so I know that if these guys are coming here, that there's probably other people there that, you know, I really need to be careful about what kind of theories I present, since I am a site that's trying to stick only to the facts. So.
Yeah, well, and you know what? That's why I really liked your website. It's very thorough, and it is presenting facts.
Mm-hmm.
And when you mix the two opinions and facts together, it sometimes isn't good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, you talked on your website about getting a file a mysterious file sent to you, something called Mentor Zip, or what is it, the Secret Doc. It's all about a study of assassination.
It is, the best way I can sum up what is contained in that particular zip file is, it's a how-to manual on how to create your own Columbine. It is a step-by-step dummy's guide to wrecking your own revenge at a high school, which is why it's not on my website. It's literally a dummy's plan. And it even takes examples from Columbine and spells out what they did right and what they did wrong and how you can correct it to make sure that you have a more successful trip than they did.
Wow. Well, I hope you'll be sending that on the CD that you're sending.
You know, I have been. And I have been because of the fact that I figure anybody who's willing to, you know, go through the ropes to get a hold of the CD isn't going to be somebody who's probably, you know, in high school looking for material like that. So, pretty much all the information that I don't have on the website right now, that file included. There's also the files of the two boys dead in the library, which I don't have on my website. All those files are being sent along with the CDs.
Yeah, and that's a great I really appreciate that kind of archival stuff that you're doing, just for the history of this research. Because like you said earlier, I believe the same thing, that in five more years, there'll probably be a lot. It'll be a lot different story and a lot more research going on than what's going on today.
Exactly. And you know, back when this all happened, I realized, you know what? Someday we're going to want to have a record of what really happened, and you know, to be able to chase it back and to see, you know, if nothing else, for kids to write their reports in school over these things without having tons of reports coming in about how they were Satanists or Nazis or how the victims all deserved it, or, you know, it just seemed to me to be the best plan to stick that way.
Yeah, well, hey, you were talking about Bowling for Columbine earlier, and I didn't get your comment on that. What did you think of that?
You know, I haven't seen it yet, if that tells you anything. When it first came out, I had made plans to go and see it, and then I found out more or less what the movie was about, and it really put me off. It seemed to me that Michael Moore was putting together what could have been a made-for-TV documentary for the movie theater just to get that extra kick of money. That, you know, it just, it seems to me for the kind of nature of movie that he made, he could have done that for television and given it to people for free instead of charging them, you know, $9 a pop for a matinee.
Boy, I like your politics. You are awesome. Yeah, that's cool. So what do you do? So today you do webs, you design web pages for a living?
Yeah, I've been doing it for several years now. I've worked for several corporations like Intel and, you know, some of the major ones, a lot of minor ones. Just doing web development and design, and I'm also a freelance artist, and that's primarily what I do aside from raising my kids right now.
You know, it's been great talking to you and having the kids screaming in the background.
Yeah.
it fits so perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm a parent. That's actually part of what motivated my Columbine site there, was having been a teenager and being the proud possessor of two and waiting there, so.
Boy, so out of everything, when you look at this whole thing, what's the biggest mistake that you see?
Oh, gosh, there's so many.
All right, the top 10.
Top 10. Really, honestly, I think I can narrow it down to one big one, and that is just the repeated failure of people who knew what was up to stop and make a difference. That there were so many times and so many areas where somebody could have said, yo, there's something wrong here, and they didn't, you know. And there, to the credit of some of the people, like, you know, Brooks Brown's parents taking their information to the police and then having it just stop there, you know, I can't fault them. They tried to do the right thing, but then it comes down again to how the law officials drop the ball again. But there's just too many glaring examples of where these boys were screaming out, you know, stop us, we're going to do something horrible, and nobody stopped them. You know,
if you were able to talk to them, you know, the minutes before they did that, what would you say
Oh, geez, that's an interesting question.
Would you try to stop them?
You know, I would, and I say that because I got an email. Well, I had about 6 months ago, maybe seven now. I had some boys over in the UK pointing or posting to my guest book about how they were going to do the same thing to a school on their own hometown, and it was really kind of hard to decide what to do in that instance, especially since they weren't in the United States. There's only so much that I could do. But I did talk to them. I tried to start a dialogue and email with them to express how I thought that they could, you know, better use their anger, that instead of being destructive with it, to be constructive with it, which is pretty much what I did with my own rage and upset about this whole Columbine issue, which is I channeled it into the website and gave to the world something better. That, you know, I'd probably try to convince Eric and Dylan to do the same thing. Instead of taking this rage you feel out on people, channel it into something to make something better so that people will remember you as something good and not something evil.
And do something to get, you know, a better revenge.
Right, exactly. You know, make a difference. Take that energy. Power it into something that does make a difference, that it should have been a difference that was a better one. I mean, I guess that's really all there is to it, is that, you know, take that energy and put it into to good and not evil. But I don't think it would have worked because they were so locked into their mindset then that I had a reaction, you know, pretty much what I would have expected from them, from the guys that I did talk to, which was, you know, well, we appreciate your, you know, point of view, and we'll take that into consideration, but we're still going to do it.
You know, you could channel evil into evil like Marilyn Manson.
Well, I suppose, but I think in that instance that I'd encourage them to go and, you know, get something more involved with community than that. But, you know, it just...
Well, I mean, Marilyn Manson has channeled his anger into some artwork.
Well, and that's true, and that's a good point, that, you know, he has definitely taken his own. And from what I understand about Marilyn Manson, you know, he's really not that different from, you know, the average Joe. He's just expressing his inner hatred in a little different way than the rest of us do.
Right, he's embracing the hate.
Yeah.
And not hurting anyone.
Exactly, and, you know, that's more what I think they should have done. And if they had done it, that I think that they could have really made a powerful effect on the world. I mean, they obviously show that they had the motivation to do something that was powerful. It's just what they chose to do was not what was the right thing to do.
Yeah, when I put myself in the shoes of what would I say to them, because when I first heard about it, I wasn't necessarily sad. I understood their anger, and I have been in a situation and situations where I was picked on, and I think, you know, I'm on the other side of that line we spoke about.
Right.
Where I relate to their anger and their hate and their rage. So I always thought, what would I say to them? And I would try to tell them to embrace their hate in a more positive way, like you had spoke about.
Right, yeah. And, you know, I think that a lot of people really do understand that motivation. I hear from people every day through email, you know, saying, you know, I don't really like the fact that they killed a bunch of people, but I understand why they did it. You know, and it's a tough fence to ride for a lot of people, which is why you end up in one camp or the other, because, you know, you can't just sit there. People won't let you sit there and say, well, I understand why they did it. I just don't condone it.
Well, I don't know. I think the other side of the camp, they're closed-minded assholes, even when they grew up. I just don't I don't see them as being anything but that, because I can see their point of view. Mm-hmm. I can look at it and go, man, these people are mentally ill.
Yeah.
There's something wrong. So I can see where they say, you're just a bunch of sick fucks,
right,
or whatever they say. But at some point, I see both sides. Maybe I'm more sympathetic to the other side, but I can see their side. And that side, they don't even see the other side.
Yeah, and that's well, and you get that some of that on the other side, too, with the people who, you know, name themselves Eric and Dylan worshiper and stuff like that they close their minds to anything but the fact that Eric and Dylan were right. And you can't do that either, you know. You
right.
have to take both sides of it. And I think that's really the understated side of this whole tragedy, is the fact that people find it way too easy to focus on the 13 people who were shot, you know, by outside forces, and they completely neglect the fact, you know, that there were two suicides, too. That if you chop out the fact that these guys went completely berserk at their school and killed people, if they just killed themselves, you know, they would have been nothing. You know, they would have been somebody's sob story about how, oh, my poor kid was picked on. But nobody would have heard it in the news. Nobody would have cared. You know, they would have been two more victims, and nobody would have cared.
Right. That's the sad ending to this story, isn't it?
Well, and it's so easy to forget that people get hung up on, you know, the fact that they were monsters. They were monsters, and they forget the reason why they became that, you know, and that's what I keep trying to press home to people with my website, is you can't lose sight of the fact that, you know, there were cause and effect here. You don't have monsters come up out of the shadows from nowhere. Doom didn't make them. Marilyn Manson didn't make them. KMFDM didn't make them. Something else did it.
Experts say they may talk about carrying out an act. They may appear agitated. They may have felt humiliated in some way. There's often a history of violence.
Teens are attracted to anarchy and rock music that talks about anarchy because their deepest wish is to have total freedom.
Oh,
Yeah, so that was an interview. That was a lady by the name of Cindy, or Sin, C-Y-N. She's real cool. I think her website is like one of the best websites out there about Columbine. You can search it under a Columbine site for $20.99, or just go to columbine.freetohost.net. There's no www in front of that. It's just HTTP, whatever, / blah, blah, blah. There's no www, though. It's columbine.freetohost.net. And tell Cindy that Shane sent you. And you should really donate to her site. She'll send you this really cool CD with a lot more information than you can get on the site. And I'm going to... Coming up, I'm going to play a little clip from the Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris video. They made a couple movies, and it's sort of creepy. This is part two of the Columbine special that I'm doing, and it's a three-part special. Next week, I'm going to be talking all about the controversy and the conspiracy of there being more than two gunmen, which seems pretty obvious to a lot of people. I'm going to play some clips right after I'm done blabbing at you. And one of them, like I said, is right from the Dylan and Eric home movie that they made. And they talk about, killing people for the government. And it's sort of odd. And when this first happened, like I have hundreds of hours of Columbine footage. And when this first happened, even the sheriff and the teachers had spoke out and said that they saw more than two gunmen. Teachers, not just students, not just people in hysterics. Teachers also were talking about seeing the SWAT team shooting students down in the hall. Like literally the SWAT team, they watched them shoot kids and watch the kids drop. And these are some of the same kids that were labeled as killed by Dylan and Eric. Well, we'll get into that next week. I hope you enjoyed the interview. And coming up right after these clips is an interview with Brooks Brown's mom. Now, I think he helped. The only reason I would believe that guy is because of his mom. Out of the hundreds of hours of tapes I have, his mother seems like the only one that's sincerely, she seems like an honest person. Take a listen and contact me at 3ringradio.com and see if you don't agree with me.
Yeah, the government here wants us to take out nine of those radioactive closed infested encampments.
Yep, we've been doing those for the past few months. They get harder and harder every time. I don't know how we're gonna keep doing this stuff. I think we might have to get some more weaponry.
Yeah, seems it's almost like there's a master behind it. After that blast, there's no telling who's behind it.
Yeah. A few years ago, when that first atomic bomb went off near here, for some reason, some of these clothes have been just getting pretty radioactive on us. So, gotta go take them out.
Sheriff, is there any indication that some of those bombs were planted earlier than yesterday, or did they all come in?
That is very possible.
There's just no way to say at this point.
I think that based on how complex the whole thing was, how it went down, I think it was being planned for many months.
And being planned by more than just two?
I would think that it'd be hard for me to imagine that no other associate of these two suspects would have been aware.
And yet no one seemed to have picked up on the trench coat mafia as a real threat, including you, Sergeant.
Well, that's true.
And Judy Brown is joining us now from Littleton, Colorado. Judy, good to have you with us this morning. I saw you shaking your head sometimes as you watched those reporters talk about the tapes. You've seen them. What are your impressions?
Well, we have different impressions because we knew the boys. Their relationship was very complex, and it answered questions for us. Ultimately, Dylan was afraid of Eric, and it was proved in the tapes. People won't see these things because they didn't know the boys' personalities. We saw very different, we saw many things in that tape. It answered a lot of our questions.
Like
other
what?
People won't see those.
Like what?
Well, Dylan was afraid of Eric, and we knew that. And in the video, there was a scene where he found out that Dylan was Jewish, and there was a moment there where I think Dylan thought Eric was going to turn on him. In the end, I think when the two had the goodbye tape, I think they were ready to back out, but one pushed the other. I could see the emotion start to show. Everyone else saw that as cold, but I saw them starting to come back to real life, and I think a minute later and they wouldn't have done it. I could see very different things in the tapes.
You have been, Judy, from the beginning, I know, very critical of the way the police handled this. You filed a complaint against Eric Harris before all this happened. It went nowhere. Then the police afterward began to say, with no proof, as it turns out, that your son Brooks may have been involved. He's now obviously been totally cleared. You're leading a campaign to get the sheriff removed from office. Why?
Because this man is not professional. He has not handled this at all right from the very beginning. Just the fact that he came out and named my son. They didn't even search our house. They didn't take my son's computer. My son was not as much of a suspect as everyone would believe. The sheriff was trying to turn this community against my family so they wouldn't believe us about the web pages and all the reports.
The official police report on all of this has now been delayed a couple of times. We're not going to see it, apparently, for some time. Do you have any sense why that's true? Do you have a feeling of why that's the case?
I think they're hiding a lot of things, and I think when people find out, the world is not going to believe what they're going to hear. They're hiding many things.
There are now so many lawsuits filed. A number have come in the last a day or so. Are you surprised at all these lawsuits showing up?
I'm not surprised at all. We knew they were in the workings. We were hoping that the truth would come out and this wouldn't have to happen, but it seems the only way we can get the truth out is to force them to tell us the truth.
You obviously in a sensitive position because you're also good friends with Susan Klebold. Has she come to any better understanding about the secrets that her son was hiding?
She has not, and I share all the information I have, and we talk quite openly. She has not. We do know that this was caused Dylan's personality. People don't ask the people that know them. All the experts are coming in here, and they have the answers. But the people that know Dylan have the answers when people are ready to hear it. People don't want to know that it's caused by harassment in the school and that a sensitive child can take a turn like this and society can do this to your child even if you're good parents.
How is she coping? Is she doing okay?
No, she's not. They are not doing okay.
And how about your son, Brooks, is who I mentioned, cleared, no implications in any of this? How's he doing?
He's doing better now that the families are starting to talk with us, the victims' families, and that's important to us that they realize that Brooks wasn't involved. And we just heard from another family a couple days ago. So as soon as we hear from all of those families, Brooks will feel a lot better about it.
Harris was sitting in his chair holding this sawed-off shotgun. He wasn't just holding it. He was fondling it. He was playing with it. He had named it. He named it Arlene.
He kissed his shotgun at one point as he's talking, and he points it at the camera.
And he said, "Do you believe in God?" Bam, 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 bam. Everybody in the room, there was a gasp in the room when we saw that. This was planned.
It was knowing that all of this went into what they did that just was stunning. And to actually see this kind of video diary of before we went and did the deed was powerful. It was very eerie.
They talked about how much they hated humanity and how worthless human beings were. And they included themselves among that. They said, you all need to die, and we need to die too.
It was almost as if, you know, they were going to a video game contest. How many can we kill? How many can we knock off? It was this detachment.
How laid back they were about all this. How sort of indifferent, as if there was a disconnect between this reality and the fantasy life that they had. And that was driven home when they talked about coming back in the afterlife, if there was one, and coming back in a doom room would be an ideal thing for them.
He talked about dying and said that he hoped he would be at the third level or at one of the levels of the doom game. That's where his heaven was.
They got the camera off of the tripod and Klebold held it, and Harris gave a demonstration of everything that was in his room.
That was quite amazing to have him just open a couple of drawers or pull some books back and reach in and pull out some of these little CO2 cartridge grenades, essentially, that he had made, and other pipe bombs that he had.
At one point, Harris is telling the story about how his mom walked in his room, and the shotgun was close by, the sawed-off shotgun, and under something. And he was mocking her for not having checked the room. If you'd just checked the room, you'd have found this. And then he said they didn't have a clue.
But they had some compassion in them because they talked about the pain that their parents were going to go through.
He said, quoting Shakespeare, good wounds hath bore bad sons. He quoted that about himself. And I think that is really the point. I mean, that's the exclamation point on this whole thing. He hated himself. And Klebold hated himself. Klebold says, I'm going to a better place. I didn't like life too much. I'm going to a better place. And he says this as he's suiting up, as he's getting his things ready.
Minutes, you know, half an hour maybe before it all happened. Putting their gear on, getting ready to go. Very businesslike, very cold, very calculated. No more of the swagger, no more of the, you know, the teenage joking around and so forth. One of them said, it's Judgment Day.
Klebold harbored as much hate as Harris did. These two guys were in this together. There's no question. There was no follower and leader.
I think everyone on Earth wishes that. Wish they would have explained more. And stood to answer for their crimes instead of being, mad in the end, mad and cowardly, because how can you not be to do all of that and then kill yourself?
Hi, this is Ben of Penn and Teller. You're listening to Three Ring Radio, but I've been known to lie. Truly, ladies and gentlemen.